TJ, I'm sure you are ready, huh? Let's give us 2.5 minutes. We want to make copies for all members. Didn't you say that you want to keep testing and you are surely there for 1 minute? Every member here, after this long break, although it's not a real break, we're working. What's wrong here? Can somebody help us? To work, to stretch. And therefore, what is in front of us, the international strategy of the Department of Public Service and Administration. I believe that DG, we are at your hand on this item. I don't know who's going to make a presentation on this.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you for this opportunity, Chairperson, honorable members, to engage with you around the international work of the DPSA. I think it would be important at the outset to indicate that the international work of the DPSA obviously is conducted within the ambit of the portfolio of the Minister. And there are a number of important programs that are also taking place within the family. We do have Professor Hendricks here with us, and he might also want to elaborate on some of the work with family. We will here and there indicate where we are also working with family on on certain programs. I thought it would be important to mention that, Chairperson, and then to indicate that I am joined here by our Deputy Director General of Governance, the branch which manages the international work for the department and coordinates all the departmental activities pertaining to international work. Dr. Ellen Cornegay is the Deputy Director General. We also have Mr. Ruan Chitsoff, who deals with the anti-corruption program, which is also very much part of the international work. Lewis Rapkin, obviously, you all know very well. We also have with us Kialabucha Mapunye, who is the director in international African affairs. And we have Bugani Mtembu, who I believe you also know very well. So thanks for the opportunity. Just to indicate how we intend presenting today, I would like to talk to the various sections. I will give an elaboration on the background to the international work, and then we will look at the Africa agenda, particularly focusing on the Pan-African Ministers Program on Governance and Public Administration, as well as regional and international anti-corruption cooperation, and then look at post-conflict and reconstruction support work that we're doing in the area of governance, particularly in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We'll also look at South-South cooperation, the IPSA work that we're doing, and look at some of the emerging programs, and conclude then, and also hopefully engage with the honorable members around the possible support that Parliament could give us in the work that we are doing, because there are certain challenges which we also face with regards to this. So if I can indicate that really what we're trying to do in the DPSA international program is to support South Africa's international priority intervention areas, which are really around the consolidation of the African agenda, the promotion of South-South cooperation, fighting corruption, promoting peace and security, by ensuring that we begin to infuse a governance and public administration dimension in South Africa's international work. In terms of the DPSA, the actual work is cross-cutting because it would cover all the areas of public administration. So while the governance branch is responsible for coordinating all the work, some of the work might be in areas of human resource management, for example. Some of it might be in the areas of service delivery kind of work, and so on and so forth. And what we are doing at the moment is based on our experiences, and the work we've done up until now is to develop a more systematic, strategic approach, and we're working on that at the moment. At the moment, we could say that the focus which we have is more on the African agenda, but there is an increasing thrust towards a more global international strategy, and as you will see, we have made some remarkable progress in the area of IPSA work, where we have established a working committee dealing with governance and public administration matters, and we've actually moved quite quickly in taking that forward. And I think you'll find the work that Dr. Cornegay will present in this regard quite impressive. Just very briefly to introduce the African agenda before I hand over to Dr. Cornegay. As indicated, we would like to give you an idea of the Pan-African Ministers Program on Governance and Public Administration. It is one of the major areas of work which we have been focusing on. It is really, in terms of its objective, very much focused on establishing a program for Africa on governance and public administration, but also to link governance and administration with broader developmental objectives for the continent, and then look at areas of common concern. And I think you will see that when we look at the different thematic areas that have emerged through this program over many, many years of the existence of the Pan-African Ministers Conference on Governance and Public Administration. And I would believe that some of you may have even participated in some of those meetings related to that over the years. There is a big emphasis on knowledge sharing and an emerging focus very much on capacity development. And obviously we will also look at the challenges, but we are trying to mobilize a collective commitment to the priority areas that have been identified, and then looking at the role of national, regional, and continental as well as international organizations participating in the program. And just if we look at the structure of the program presently, the secretariat, the major participants there are the African Union, which provides the coordination at continental level and needs to adapt decisions into AU policy organs. And obviously one of the key objectives is to see this program emerging as a clear special technical committee within the AU system. NEPAD also participates at the secretariat level. It implements aspects of the program. It obviously contributes through the mobilization of resources. NEPAD is very much focused at the moment on the whole area of capacity development, which even goes beyond, way beyond governance and public administration. And I think, as we've stated in meetings and engagements we've had in the past, the current chairperson is our minister. And the role of the chairperson's office is to provide political leadership as well as convene bureau meetings, because that's how the AU system works in its various areas of work. The work is driven by bureaus which consist of countries selected from the different regions within Africa. There is a need to convene a number of meetings to mobilize resources, to look at sustaining strategic partnerships, and then also what we've had to do in order to take the work forward in the various thematic areas is identify particular countries to champion the priority areas. To make this thing sustainable, we need to ensure that we create the necessary structures and buy-in from individual countries who would take forward priority areas. So that's, we thought we need to explain, just to make it clear that this, the program is not fully dependent on South Africa, but we have created this concept of champions in order to, as I've indicated, secure buy-in, to provide leadership in implementation activities, to coordinate implementation at the regional level, to accelerate implementation, and so on. And the champions that we have in place at the moment, and these various programs, will be explained by Dr. Cornegay, is Nigeria on the area of anti-corruption, Burundi on post-conflict reconstruction, Algeria on the African Public Service Charter, and Mauritius on the All Africa Public Sector Innovation Awards. But I would like, Chairperson, now to hand over to Dr. Cornegay, who will take us through the next part of the presentation. Thank you.
Addresses itself to the specific elements of the program for the African ministers. And it's organized along thematic areas. And the themes that we will be discussing this morning are the Africa Public Service Day, the Africa Public Service Charter. Then we will be looking at the Public Sector Innovations Award, the collaboration with the regional economic community, and then we would be looking at anti-corruption, and that will be done separately. And so these are the areas that we will discuss initially, and thereafter we will focus on the post-conflict and reconstruction program. With regard to the Africa Public Service Day, the Africa Public Service Day is championed by Namibia at a continental level. It is an event that is celebrated throughout the continent every June 23rd. The aim is to promote values such as professionalism, accountability, responsiveness, ethics, and performance within the public service. The Bureau, as indicated by the Director General, decided in April of this year that the focus from now on with regard to the Africa Public Service Day would be to popularize the Africa Public Service Day within countries at a national level, because there was a clear indication that this particular event is not fully observed in a number of countries. This is the reason why the South African celebrations today, I mean this particular year, were attached to the Public Service Week, so that we can begin to infuse within our national calendar this particular event. The progress that we have today with regard to the Africa Public Service Day is that in 2005, five SADC countries, that is Lesotho, Swaziland, Namibia, Mauritius, and South Africa, were linked by satellite in order to celebrate the event simultaneously. Much of that connectivity was around each country indicating what has been done, and also to discuss the issues around Africa Public Service Day. In June 23, 2007, the event in South Africa was celebrated nationally and throughout the continent in different countries. The event was celebrated under the following thematic areas, that is, promoting good governance with emphasis on anti-corruption and ethics. This particular theme was arrived at by the ministers in February of this year. in the future, within the next few months, the continental celebrations will take place in September 2007 in Namibia, as Namibia is the coordinator. So essentially it was a phased-in approach for this year, first at the national level and then at the continental level, which will be coordinated by Namibia. With regard to the Africa Public Service Charter, there is a recognition that the Africa Public Service Charter is an excellent instrument for promoting transformation of the Africa Public Service. And so it aims to enhance governance and public administration capacity as well as effectiveness. The Africa Public Service Charter with regard to the progress up to today is that there is a framework concept note which we would circulate. There is an aid memoir and a questionnaire developed and adopted by the ministers in December of 2006 in Addis Ababa. The intent of this particular questionnaire is to get an understanding of the process in the different African countries and also to begin to assess the domestication of this particular charter in the various countries. It is championed by Algeria. South Africa held and supported a SADC workshop on the review and update of the charter, which was held from the 5th to the 6th of July in South Africa. The meeting adopted the South African model for replication in other regions, that is in ECOWAS, ECAS, MAGRIB, and COMESA. The South African model really looked at the charter and divided it into four specific areas. That is, to look at the legal framework and see what is required within that particular framework, to look at the national machineries to see what must happen in order for the charter to be implemented from an institutional capacity point of view, and then to look at domestication, what processes are in place to ensure that this particular charter can be implemented. For example, in Namibia, there is an entire office in the presidency that reviews the systems for implementation of the charter. And then to look at the requirements for monitoring and evaluation. The way forward is that South Africa will engage with technical partners to support the regional workshops in COMESA, ECOWAS, ECAS, and MAGRIB. South Africa is committed to provide technical assistance to replicate this model. And training will be organized. The training will be conducted with the assistance of UNDEPA, and it will draw largely upon Central and Latin American specialists who have undergone a similar process. As I've indicated earlier, the issues around anti-corruption will be handled in a separate presentation. The Public Sector Innovation Award. This is a South African model that is now being replicated at the continent level. The aim of the Innovation Awards are to promote regional integration, reward innovative service delivery models, promote and replicate best practices in the public sector through the showcasing of African innovation on the global scene. The champion for this particular thematic area is Mauritius. The progress today is that these awards were launched in December 2005, and it is expected that at the sixth PAN, which may happen in the first quarter of 2008, there would be awards in this particular area. There is a steering committee that is actually supporting the implementation of these particular innovation awards, and that is the African Union Commission, NEPAD, Mauritius, the DPSA, and CPSI. CPSI is the technical arm of this particular award because much of what is being done has already been done at CPSI with regard to the national awards. We've identified four phases, And of the four phases, the first two, which are the conceptualization and planning phase, have been concluded. We are now in the marketing phase, and we've identified that the regional economic commissions are central in terms of the sustainability of the program. And that is part of the reason why a team consisting of the members of the steering committee have visited all of the regional economic commissions, with the exception of the North African Commission. The purpose for this was to provide a briefing for the Regional Economic Commission to engage with the Departments of Public Service and Administration to ensure that these awards are publicized, and also to work with GTZ in the various countries, because the GTZ will be supporting the remaining phase, which is the adjudication phase, where we receive the applications, they are reviewed, and nominees are, and finalists are nominated. It is concluding with a radio and television campaign in the month of August, as the closing date is August 30th. The adjudication process will begin in September, and the award ceremony, as I indicated, is targeted for 2008. With regard to the regional economic communities, I would just like to say this is a slightly different program in the sense that it does not fall within the classical area of a thematic area. It is one where South Africa, as a member state of the AU, has undertaken to support strengthening of the regional economic community, and it has identified SADC, being a member of SADC, as the one that it would support, and therefore it would not, in a sense, it's in compliance with the AU request that member states support the regional economic communities. The progress to date is that there has been quite a great deal of planning around this particular area. The concept note has been adopted, and there is an aid memoir. There was a SADC expert workshop, which was hosted from the 2nd to the 4th of July in South Africa. And at that time, the SADC secretariat did not attend. And that is where, as part of the way forward, there is to be a workshop in hosted to work directly with the SADC secretariat around the findings of that particular workshop, and also to share experiences with other RECs, in, given the fact that the African Union has indicated that a similar process should be replicated in the other regional economic communities. Within the thematic areas of the minister's program, there is provision made for information and communication technology. And the aim of this particular program is to contribute towards helping to bridge the digital divide among African member states, and also to establish the Commonwealth Connect program through assistance to member states to meet their ICT needs. At the moment, it's in the process of inception, and the DPSA will be responsible to share information on ICTs and e-governments with Commonwealth Connect, to share information from Commonwealth on ICT and e-government with the South African government, to attend workshops and meetings of the Commonwealth Connect and generate reports, and to ensure that information and interaction is managed efficiently through the inclusion of other government departments and agencies. The way forward is to share ICT best practices with African states at Commonwealth Secretariat. So the initial emphasis is among the African Commonwealth countries. Now, I think we'd go to Section B of the presentation, where we would look at regional and international anti-corruption work, and Ruan Pitsov will do that particular presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members of the DG. Thank you. If I can just briefly start with the evolution of the anti-corruption program. It started some time ago with South Africa playing quite a strong leadership role. We have, as a country, during the early days of the development of the United Nations Convention as well as the AU Convention, played a particular leadership role, not only in terms of the participation and intervention, but also in consolidating the Africa group within the United Nations Convention negotiation process. Between 2001 and 2003, we led the negotiations on the United Nations Convention against Corruption as well as the African Union Convention on Preventing and Combating Corruption. But we also, during that time, assisted the UNODC, which is the Secretariat to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, to develop a handbook for investigators and prosecutors as a collaborative effort with the law enforcement agencies in South Africa to assist other countries to implement the United Nations Convention. We've also assisted the SADC Secretariat to develop the SADC Regional Anti-Corruption Program, which in essence is based on the Public Service Anti-Corruption Strategy in our country. Also, because we played that role in the UN process, we form part of a group that's called the Friends of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, which is an informal body that strives to motivate and support other countries to implement the convention. And with this Friends of the Convention then also developed the first draft plan of work of the Conference of State Parties, which is the implementing mechanism of the UNCAC. Second area, the first more substantive area I want to focus on is just around the promotion of the African anti-corruption agenda and how we've gone about it. First of all, early last year, we established the Africa Organizing Committee, and the purpose of this was to bring together the main players within in the continent to work towards the Africa Forum and Global Forum. And it was a forum that brought together the AU Commission, MEFAT, the African Development Bank, and the regional economic communities. And this body then assisted South Africa around the organization and planning of the African Global Forums. Members are also aware that we hosted the second meeting of Pan-African anti-corruption bodies in collaboration with the AU Commission, the Africa Forum on Fighting Corruption, and that we did with the AU Commission and the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, and then also the Global Forum 5 on Fighting Corruption, which is the premier anti-corruption event that brings together both civil society, governments, academics, to progress on the fight against corruption. The other way we try to achieve that is we've commissioned a study and published a study around anti-corruption good practice in Africa. And the purpose of this study was to collect from around the continent those cases or examples where good anti-corruption practice exists and share it to assist countries also with the implementation of both the sub-regional conventions, but also the AU Convention and the UN Convention. I think probably our main achievement around this area was working towards that common understanding that emanated from the Africa Forum around corruption, and that we were able to redirect the discussions that took place in the Global Forum around this area and ensure that it was captured there. And ongoing, we participate and support the multilateral processes of the United Nations Convention. There are various working groups that cover areas from monitoring, evaluation, asset recovery, technical assistance, to which we are active and work together with a variety of other departments. We have a coordinating mechanism that brings into its fold the law enforcement agencies, foreign affairs, intelligence, and various other departments that assist with the coordinating of this anti-corruption work at regional and international level. During the meeting early this year, South Africa was also elected as the chair of the Bureau. As Dr. Cornegay indicated, and DG indicated, bureaus, the mechanism according to which AU programs are implemented, and South Africa is the chair. and now have the responsibility to, with other members of the Bureau, to come up with a plan of work for the continent that built on the outcomes of the this second Pan-African meeting, but also of the Africa Forum and the Global Forum. And the outcomes of all those forums are available in that green book that has been distributed here. We're also busy supporting the Africa Union Commission with the establishment of the advisory board. Now that advisory board is really the one that's going to oversee implementation of the AU Convention within the continent, and also would proceed with implementation. As host then also of Global Forum 5, we have to take some steps, which I will get to in a moment. First, I will just take a step back when we talk about Global Forum 5, indicate again the premier event. It was attended by 850 delegates from 110 countries. Considering this was the fifth Global Forum, it had the highest attendance from countries from around the world. The preamble and the operational part of the Global Forum 5 declaration captures really well that common understanding on corruption that emanated from the Africa Forum, as well as the priority areas that was identified in the Africa Forum, like a return to traditional values, like the asset recovery program, and so forth. Our next steps would be to identify a new host for Global Forum 6 that must take place in 2009, and we're in that process. And we also have to convene an expanded international organizing committee that will bring together governments, international organizations, and civil society to look at the future of the Global Forum processes, also in relation to other global instruments such as the Conference of State Parties of the UNCTAD. Yeah. Talking about the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, I've already indicated most of these things. Maybe just safe to say that South Africa was the 11th country to ratify that convention. We do comply with the mandatory requirements of that convention. And that the implementation of this convention is also the basis for our anti-corruption cooperation within the ISRA Dialogue Forum, where the current focus is on exchange of good practice in the areas of conflict of interest and community mobilization and campaigning around anti-corruption. And that is the basis for our collaboration in ISRA towards implementation of UNCTAD. Around the OECD, as members would recall, just very recently we concluded the process of ratification of the OECD Working Group on Bribery, as well as the OECD Convention on the Bribery of Foreign Officials. And those accession documents signed by the President and deposited earlier this year, and we're becoming the first African country to do so. We have started our participation in the first meeting of the OECD Working Group on Bribery that took place in June, and we are now preparing for the Phase 1 and 2 reviews, which is a rigorous review about our implementation of those conventions, and that review would then also affect Parliament, because the peer review teams would want to engage with Parliament on the implementation. Of course, our participation in those working groups have also given us access to other parts of the OECD that is beneficial to the portfolio, and that is to the Directive on Public Governance and Territorial Development. And they focus on areas such as corruption only in the public service performance, regulatory reform, regional development, and e-government. Thank you, Chair. I would now hand back to Dr. Cornegay for the part of the post-conflict and reconstruction presentation.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the post-conflict and post-conflict and reconstruction work, I think we're looking at it at two levels. One is at the level of the ministers' conference, and the second is at the national level. From the point of view of the Pan-African Ministers' Conference, the aim of this particular post-conflict and reconstruction work is mainly to bring about and reform public service in post-conflict countries. and the champion for that particular work is Burundi. But South Africa also implements a fairly extensive program at the national level, which is in response to the national priority of consolidating the African agenda, with a particular emphasis on post-conflict countries that have been identified as DRC, Sudan, and so on. So what we would be looking at now would be the post-conflict country that is in response to the national priority, and that is the post-conflict work within the Democratic Republic of Congo. The aim of this particular work is to assist the DRC to rebuild the public service for effective governance and realization of its own developmental goals. The progress to date is following a session between South Africa and the DRC on an MOU and joint action plan was signed in August 2004 between the Minister for the Public Service and Administration and the DRC Minister. It was all entirely in the field of public administration. Subsequently, the two ministers agreed that during the period leading up to election, the focus would be only on two projects, and that is the public service census and anti-corruption. With regard to the census, the biometric enrollment for Kinshasa city-state was completed in mid-June 2007. The manual census for the entire DRC public service is 95% completed. The feasibility for provincial biometric enrollment study for Katanga, Bandundu, and Bas-Congo has been finalized. With regard to anti-corruption, in 2005, two sub-projects were envisaged and agreed with the Democratic Republic of Congo. These are assistance to roll out the DRC Code of Conduct for public officials and to the development of a model for a national anti-corruption framework for the DRC. Completed code of conduct developed and implemented, as well as the training material. Currently, we are renegotiating the MOU between the DRC, the UN, the United Nations Drug Office on Drug and Crime, and South Africa to establish a national anti-corruption framework for the DRC. We have, however, over this period, observed some of basic principles and lessons learned that we feel are worth highlighting in this particular presentation. During the transition, all political leaders supported the census, and we concluded that without that kind of support, it would have been impossible to conduct this particular work. The DPSA presence has played a very significant role. It is in regard to the way forward, that is, it provided strategic direction, continuity, and sustainability of the census project. The project has affirmed that an initial and upfront outlay of resources, whether these be financial or material or technical, they do ensure a speedy entry into transformation and also a speedy process in terms of deliverables with regard to post-conflict situations. We would be renegotiating the MOU with regard to anti-corruption. And also, there is an upcoming DNC which will provide further direction. I should also indicate this is a particular area where there is a close working relationship within the portfolio that includes some of these. At the minister's level, we are now in negotiations with the UNDP, with GCZ, to provide a strategic support for Burundi to to begin to implement this program as a champion. Section C of the presentation will deal with the South-South cooperation. The GPSA South-South collaboration really now focuses almost exclusively on IBSA. And the key areas of this work are establishing and formalizing the working group on public administration through the MOU to be signed at the IBSA October 2007. The memorandum of understanding is ready and has been approved by all three countries, with a recent approval by India this week. The collaboration with India and Brazil to write trilateral papers on service delivery improvement, service delivery centers, performance management, and anti-corruption. I should indicate that the papers were arrived at as a mechanism of beginning to establish this working group. The papers themselves are intended to come up with recommendations for implementation in terms of enhancing the effectiveness of service delivery centers and also overall service delivery. More recently, we've included the paper on anti-corruption, which focuses almost exclusively on the compliance by three countries with the UN anti-corruption, with the UN instruments with anti-corruption. The DPSA also has a bilateral MOU with India, which among others includes human resources issues, exchange of experts to deliver lectures, joint training programs, capacity building and joint studies through comparative research, and secondment of public officials from India and South African institutions. This is also an area where SAMDI is quite actively involved. Promotion of South-South cooperation through the IBSA Forum. The aim of this, again, is cooperation through meaningful and sustainable trilateral relations and engagements with India and Brazil on public administration and governance. So far, we've achieved the South African concept paper that initiated the public administration was adopted, and this is the paper that is now guiding the finalization of achieving this particular working group, and that will define the workload of this working group. The South African framework with regard to the framework of developing these spaces was also adopted by the IBSA country, and it is this framework that is now guiding the preparations of these papers. The way forward is the MOU and then translation of the findings of these papers into models that can be implemented within real life situation in public administration. The bilateral cooperation, the aim of this is to promote South-South cooperation through the development of meaningful and sustainable relationship on public administration and governance with countries of the Global South. Progress today is that there has been mainly exchange visits and discussions around possible areas of cooperation, but we don't have a clearly defined program, with the exception of India. We would be exploring to begin in some areas we have memorandums of agreement, and in some areas there's an escalating discussions around specific projects that would be Pakistan in particular, and also China. There has been a lot of work. In many of these countries, the work has really been initiated by the minister, and also with regard to Brazil, by the Director General, Brazil and India. So these are the areas that will probably begin to shift into programs. With regard to emerging programs, I should indicate that this is an area that is going to be highlighted when we finalize the international strategy, because there are a number of activities that the minister is involved in, that the director general is involved in, that the entire portfolio is involved in, and the department itself is involved in, that tend to point us in the direction of formulating public administration interventions. And this will be done in terms of the international strategy. The countries that we would be, the aim of this particular program is to promote more regional integration and support to the African agenda, but also outside of that African agenda as indicated earlier. We've been working quite closely with seven African countries which have had contact, which have come to the DPSA to observe the transformation and to engage, and where DPSA has also visited the countries. These are Nigeria, Sudan, Kenya, Ghana, Ethiopia, Lesotho, Namibia, and DRC. In order to ensure that all the parties derive maximum benefit, we want to move from unstructured visits to a more structured exchange program that will bring about, in terms of exchange of information, exchange of best practice in a more structured manner. I think that would conclude my end of the presentation, and I'll return this back to the Director General.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. In conclusion, we just wanted to highlight some of the challenges that we face and then just make some suggestions about how we can work better with the Portfolio Committee around some of these matters. I think there is a broad challenge. We obviously believe quite strongly that infusing a governance and public administration dimension into South Africa's international program does add some value, because obviously having a sound global system of good governance in all its different aspects at all different levels of the system, we believe, is in the interest of more far-reaching programs, including economic cooperation, technical cooperation, and so on and so forth. Obviously, resource mobilization is a major challenge, and in order to do the kind of work that we have been doing in all these various program areas, we have had in instances to reprioritize. We've had to build this program over time, starting from a very small base. We've had to work with donor countries and donor agencies and organizations, which poses all sorts of challenges. At the same time, we have developed sound working relationships with the AU and NEPAD, but there are challenges in terms of capacity in these organizations, which does constrain the work at times in some of the areas. A big challenge, obviously, is around sustaining the Pan-African Ministers Program. As I've indicated, the conference has unfolded over many, many years. And it's come to a stage where it has become much more concrete and focused in the thematic areas that we've indicated. But it still could be fragile, and we obviously are concerned that when the minister's second term as chairperson expires, that some of the gains that have been made could be lost if we are unable to sustain the program. Clearly a strong AU infrastructure in this area of work is going to be very important, but there are limitations there right now. There's also going to be changes at the level of the AU Commission, which will impact on all the areas of work, with new commissioners coming in early next year.
So these are some of the challenges in terms of sustaining the efforts at that level. There are, of course, particular sustainability challenges in some of the other work, the post-conflict work in the DRC. A lot of work has been done in the areas that have been elaborated on. Dr. Cornegay has also pointed out, and Professor Hendricks is here, that SAMBI is also quite involved now in the DRC with support for the management development initiatives taking place there. And I think those are going to pose a whole set of challenges, not only for the portfolio of the Minister for the Public Service and Administration, but for South Africa as a whole. So we just felt it would be useful for us to sort of consider, from our perspective at least, the kind of support and make some suggestions. And that is in terms of Parliament and this committee. Like we've been emphasizing, one of the challenges is to ensure that we infuse the governance dimension into the various forms of international cooperation that do take place. So perhaps that's one area that the honourable members could think about, is to ensure that these kinds of governance and public administration concerns are also reflected in the work of other parliamentary portfolio committees. But obviously we are also seeking guidance, political guidance, support in the work that we're doing, and we're therefore very grateful that we've had this opportunity to engage with you on these matters. There are the issues of resources. I think it's complex, obviously, to balance the international programs with the local programs. The way in which the funding works, we would need to look at different funding models, something we've been discussing with National Treasury, with Foreign Affairs, with the Presidency, and so on. Because as we built the program, particularly in the DRC, we found it difficult to budget, because there is the African Renaissance Fund, which is administered centrally, which allocates money, but we've also wanted to allocate some of our own resources to support what we believe is an initiative or a number of initiatives which are going to greatly assist the DRC in transforming the public service in a way that contributes to reconstruction of the DRC as a whole. But there are limitations in terms of the resources that we can allocate and mobilize for these purposes. But also, we feel that just the information we've brought hopefully will also be useful in terms of the political work of the honorable members that they are involved with. But also look at how we establish partnerships. We do, in a number of these sort of regional programs. Just a few weeks ago, we did hold a meeting around the African Association of Public Administration and Management, where we invited colleagues from other parts of Africa. We invited members of the committee who were there participating in the meeting. So in these and other initiatives of the Commonwealth, we are participating in the same forums, and it's important that we do engage around these matters. And then there's obviously the legal agreements, particularly in the areas of anti-corruption, that we need to ensure that these are domesticated and that they're implemented, and they take forward some very important elements of the good governance agenda as well. And then ultimately provide the oversight as Parliament on the implementation of the international legal instruments. So, Chairperson, these are just some suggestions we came up maybe for the committee to consider as we move forward. But thank you very much for this opportunity. Thank you.
Now, thank you, Gigi, and thank you, Helena, thank you, everybody. Maybe I must give the opportunity to the members to raise questions that they want to raise. But in view of the submission that you have made, all of you, this is a very big challenge. The integration of a governance and public administration agenda into the national and international strategy. Do we have monitoring groups from each country that does monitor the implementation of the decisions that are taken and the compliance to those decisions? And how do we ensure that there is a proper coordination of what is happening right across the globe in order for us to know whether we're going or coming on this? It's important to me. At the moment, I think it's a bit tricky. Yeah, it's not easy. Even from one country, it's difficult to coordinate where are we going, where are we, where do we want to achieve. It's important. If monitoring committees were there, we'll be able to engage the monitoring committee of South Africa. The Nigerians will be able to monitor there. Or we must also have a time frame on all of these things to say now. We have got as far as this. What have you achieved? Is there any way that you can achieve? In order for us also to engage with those monitoring groups. Yeah. Thank you, T.G.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And maybe to be proper to join you to appreciate this presentation that the DPSA has actually made. I've got some few questions. Firstly, on the Africa Day celebration and the public service, Africa Public Service Charter. When we look at the Africa Day celebration, in terms of the objective of having such arrangement, what is our experience so far? I mean, what lessons are we learning there? How do Africa, as Africa, we see the role that our countries play, actually, in as far as issues around public service, the role that our minister and the department is playing, which is perfect, is actually appreciated. So the issue is, to what extent are we having the rest of Africa on board in terms of active participation? Are they there? How far? I see in the challenge, in the area of challenges, if I can raise something, I'll come to it. But one will then be interested in actually looking at that. Are we, when we have this Africa Day celebrations, is it just a showcasing of South Africa, or are we actually having this active participation where we see, like I said, in terms of the objectives of this Africa Day celebrations? And then on the public service charter, I see there you're indicating some of the countries, how they actually fare and stuff like that. If we look at Africa, from the first state in Africa to the last state in Africa, comparing ourselves in terms of the public service charter, where do we think, can we say that the Africa is actually about 40% towards a way we actually are expected to be? That's my question. On our role in dealing with the post-conflict countries, I think also it's appreciated what we're doing there. You know, as the presentation was going through, I was asking ourselves to then say, are we a post-conflict country at South Africa? I know when we compare ourselves to the DRC, we may say glaringly the DRC is a post-conflict. But I mean, from apartheid to today, in as far as issues in the public service, in as far as those challenges that any developing a country has to overcome, can we say we are more or less we have overcome the challenges that confront a post-conflict a country? To some extent, one may want to suggest as we respond, and I'm not directing this question chairperson to the department, as we've adopted an approach that a presentation of this kind leads a discussion. The DPS has the accurate capacity to lead a discussion that all of us have to participate. I believe that we are also a post-conflict a country. We also have a priorities other than the priorities to assist other post-conflict countries to overcome the challenges that confront them there. We also have responsibilities. To what extent, in terms of priority setting, in terms of resource allocation, in terms of deployment of our abilities, to what extent are we actually striking a balance in as far as content? I think we need to look at that. Now, when we look at the international and corruption cooperation, in particular the OECD convention, I think as a portfolio committee we dealt with it, definitely you remember, we moved a little bit backward and forward for reasons, of course. It's interesting that one of the post-conflict countries, South Africa, is actually recognized as the first African country to accede to the OECD convention. It's very interesting. But as interesting as it is, we might want to begin to ask questions as to what does that mean? Are we moving with the rest of we don't necessarily have to, but the issue is, what account for this? Are we first movers or are they slow movers? The other, are there serious challenges that when it comes to the rest of Africa, it's so serious. When it comes to us, sometimes we are able to manage ourselves through some of those things. I think we need to do that. Now, when we look at the South-South dialogue of cooperation, chairperson, you have actually raised the issue about monitoring in terms of this memorandum of understanding and everything. It's a very important issue that we need to respond to. You know, when as a portfolio committee, of course, accompanied by the department, when we visited India, one of the issues that came out was the memorandum of understanding which our department signed with the counter department in India. And the issue was that we saw a lot of finger pointing. From our side, we're saying that no, the Indian side is not actually bringing their part or playing their part. And the India side was saying, no, South Africa is not actually playing its part in as far as that is concerned. That is one example that, you know, we need to, apart from having this international monitoring structures, we also have to sharpen our own national monitoring structures, ourselves included, as a portfolio committee, in terms of this memoranda of understanding. We are not saying that we want to come in and be part of that, but you know, it's critical that, you know, when the memorandum of understanding, like as you have indicated in terms of the programs I have, of course it will be a priority also in terms of our program to want to know as to how far you are actually taking these issues forward. I think in the area of challenges, in your presentation, the challenges that you identified, let me suggest that we are not looking at the challenges insofar as having to entrench our position as South Africa as a leading example, but we are looking at the challenges in as far as having to have all African states coming on board. I think that is what we're looking at. Because if the issue is to look at entrenching our position, our leadership role there, that then I think we may be missing a point. Because I don't think that the issue is to position ourselves to be the leader forever, but is to see Africa, all Africa, learning from us, but all of us becoming leaders. So that in the process, that is what is actually going to entrench here. I mean, to strengthen Africa as a continent. And I think that maybe is an issue. I think the suggested role that we have to play is a very good contribution by the department, which as a portfolio committee, we need to seriously look at that. I think we need to consider that and be able to to later on engage with the DPSA as to what role do we think we have to play in terms of what they are suggesting there, so that these proposals don't end up in the air. Like, for instance, I mean, those countries that the department has been assisting, the post-conflict countries and stuff like that, it will be necessary, Chairperson, to have a parliament-to-parliament interaction through portfolio committees that deal with these issues. Because it is in that fashion that the work of the department in playing their international role can be strengthened at the level of a parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me join those that appreciate the presentation that was well done. Well, part of my questions have been covered. I've got some few that can be easily clarified. The first one is in relation to the collaboration with regional economic communities, as it was presented by the doctor. My interest is understanding the SADC expert workshop that was hosted by us as a country. It was indicated that the secretariat did not attend. Is it because they don't take it serious, or are their problems. Maybe to get a little bit of elaboration why the secretary did not form part of this important workshop that was hosted by us. Then the other question, Chairperson, is in relation to the countries in page 17, countries that have visited DPFA. It was going to be of interest to us to get even countries that DPSA visited, instead of only countries that visited DPSA. And if I'm correct, we had this African Forum on Anti-Corruption around February this year in our country. Part of the theme was towards common understanding of the corruption in Africa. Checking the number of countries that visited us and the interaction at various levels, can we proudly say now we have the common definition of corruption as African countries? Because I understand that you are always saying corruption undermines good governance. That is why we view government as key when dealing with this part. But can we proudly say now we are able to define e-corruption in a common way? Because I view that as a serious challenge. Maybe the last one, Chairperson, when dealing with the challenges and our role as parliamentarians, I think Comrade Rich has captured it correct, but if we can have a paper that can be presented about what has been done up to so far, and we sit down around the table and engage, we can have a proper way forward, and we can be able to assist the DPSA about what has been done up to so far. Thanks, Chair.
From what we made a sort of a workshop regarding all these points. It's a very important point that is raised by both of them to say that suppose conflict, have we reached that stage in this country? I say no. I was watching a TV from Sunday up to about this conflict. What you're saying is correct. When you talk of corruption,
what do you mean by corruption? You know that you address
properly and uproot the problems that is a challenge to us in the country. Now, I'm saying maybe we need not to debate. What we should do is to appreciate you people coming boldly and make this kind of submission. It's eye-opening to us. Let us discuss these things at appropriate time, maybe. I'm not showing a form of workshop. It's DPSA. The Public Service Committee is engaging you on all of these questions. Then how many of this portfolio committee who wants also maybe an opportunity to that we have offered here to be offered to them so that we discuss with South Africans, where do we go, how are we, and all of those things. I'm making a suggestion, not saying that we must debate it now. I say take it back and think about it. If it doesn't work, or you believe that is not a way to go, say so at appropriate time. But we need to educate ourselves about all of these things, this globalization that we are talking about. How does it affect us? How does it affect we as South Africans? I was very much encouraged to watch, on the other hand, the two members who were arguing about the people that did not come forward a mega submission at the TRC. And the argument was still very much defensive to say, now what do you say, why the ANC people didn't. The response of the ANC was different. It makes also to be clear that we are still in conflict, that we have not threshed out from the apartheid. So what, where are we going to? What do we want to achieve in this country? In order to clean up, to clean completely the things that was engaging us in these conflicts. Now I'm saying, let's look at my brother Wei. This one is very good, and this one is commendable. What do you have done to us? I thank you. Rowan, you seem to be astonished of what I'm saying. Partly. Okay, and I think then we come to the end of it. But also the members who... Oh, I think in all the questions that are raised by Rich, Nyambi, KK, you have not responded to those.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll respond to some of the issues, and then Dr. Cornegay and Ruan will also so add. I think you yourself did raise the question of monitoring and coordination, which are clearly some of the challenges, and I think those of you who attended both the Africa Forum on Anti-Corruption and Global Forum 5 will recall that that was one of the big challenges in that particular area of work, was to come up with a common standard or a common framework for monitoring and evaluating the implementation of the various international instruments and conventions that have been signed. So I think we are in early days with some of the monitoring issues. Obviously, with regard to some of the specific aspects that we have presented today, including the various aspects of the Pan-African Conference of Ministers of Public Administration and Governance Program, through the chairperson's office, we are able to monitor and report on progress around the program. But I think the systematic monitoring that you're talking about is something that hopefully will unfold if we are able to meet our commitments pertaining to the various resolutions taken in the Africa Forum and Global Forum 5 meetings. I think the coordination question has come up, and just in relation to what the Honourable Bailoi raised, as well. I think we would certainly agree that one of the big challenges is to sustain the program in a way in which we can step aside from the current leadership role, but still have a substantial program which we would contribute to in other ways, not necessarily by having to convene, coordinate, but to maybe champion some of the areas or just participate in the various programs that are emanating that. So certainly we would agree that we mustn't move towards the situation of trying to consolidate the leadership role, but rather to ensure that we have the necessary institutional infrastructure in place to take it forward. And that clearly is one of the big challenges, which has also been raised in relation to the RECs and a particular workshop. And that is, we do need to recognize that the emerging continental and sub-regional structures are not strong and consolidated. They need a lot of strengthening. And we obviously need to play a role in contributing to their strengthening without trying to take it over and maintain that kind of role either. So I think we do certainly recognize that. I think
The other point I would like to make would be possibly to look at the big questions that came up, and that is, how do we characterize the South African state? Is it a post-conflict state? I think that is a debate, and I don't think we would ever say this is the right answer. I think it is an issue for debate and discussion. And certainly, it would be foolhardy to argue that there are no attributes of a post-conflict state which we see in South Africa, because clearly there would be, given the historical past. The issue is how we would characterize the state, and in relation to countries like Burundi, the DRC, South Sudan, Cote d'Ivoire, we might be stretching it to call ourselves a post-conflict state in the way in which those states would characterize themselves as being post-conflict states. Perhaps we would rather emphasize the developmental character of the South African state, but at the same time recognizing that part of that developmental character has to respond to the elements of post-conflict that we have, or the manifestation of post-conflict that we have. So I think it is clearly a big debate. It's an important debate, as would be the issue of globalization. And particularly in that regard, when we speak about governance in the era of globalization, how does good governance, how does public administration contribute towards managing at a national level the challenges posed by globalization? Because clearly it throws up a number of challenges which are at once political, economic, social, etc. But within those, there are clearly governance issues which do arise, and I think it would be obviously useful, and certainly if we were called upon, we would eagerly participate in such an engagement and discussion around that. Perhaps just to say that, do we have a common definition of corruption? I think within the context of both the Africa Forum and the Global Forum 5, there was a consensus around the parameters and understanding of corruption. I think if one really tries to come up with a textbook definition, there would always be debate. But I think there was a clear sense emerging from both those forums that we do need to recognize that corruption is a complex phenomenon, that it takes a variety of different forms. It's not a single thing. It has different manifestations. And also the importance of values and building national integrity systems in order to counter corruption. I think that's another very important aspect that did arise, and that in the case of the Africa Forum, a very strong emphasis on the need to recognize the progressive character of traditional cooperative values as a basis for building national integrity systems was affirmed very strongly. So I do think we took things forward, at the definitional level, at the understanding level of corruption, in those particular conferences. But the real test will be how we are able to institutionalize some of the resolutions that were taken. And clearly, this is in working towards supporting the implementation, domestication, etc., of the various legal instruments that are there. In some cases, for some countries, it's still at the ratification stage. So there are certainly challenges there.
But Chair, perhaps Dr. Cornegay and Ruan would like to add things around some of the specifics that were raised around Africa Public Service Day, the Charter, and any of the other matters that came up. The OECD, I'm sure they would want to respond on the anti-corruption work there as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Director General. I think I would just like to respond with issues pertaining to the Africa Public Service Day and Africa Public Service Charter, but also look at the REC. But before doing so, I would like us to reflect back on the slide that outlines the Secretariat, which is slide 8. And that particular slide does provide the coordination framework for the minister's program. And I think it's worth just looking at, because essentially the coordination is one that must be that must take place within that particular framework, because essentially the programs are the African Union programs, and the chairperson is any country that chairs at any given time is temporary, and so the issues of monitoring and evaluation reside with the African Union. And in an agreement in allocating roles, NEPAD is more an implementing agency. But given the particular situation over the past 2 years, the chairperson's office has assumed a number of roles, which in order to move the program around. But what has, and this was done in agreement with the African Union and NEPAD, but what is happening is a proactive process that is building capacity in the African Union and NEPAD, so that in when South Africa rotates off the chair, there would be sufficient capacity to carry on with the work, but also the building of capacity for our chairperson's office, because I think that was particularly important. With regard to the Africa Public Service Day, what has happened in the past is that there have been reports submitted to the Bureau on what different regions have done. Originally, the 5 AU regions celebrated within the sub-region. And the most extensive report always came from SADC. And so it's very difficult to say at this moment just what has happened in all of the African countries. And that is what moved the Bureau to say that there must be more focus at the national level. And we won't know the outcome of that until we go to the next Bureau meeting where we could, reports can be received on what has happened. So the emphasis now is to begin to focus the celebration at the national level, with it culminating in a continental level that is coordinated by the chair, and the chair would then provide that report. As the champion would provide that report. With regard to the Africa Public Service Charter, I think there may be an element we did not really mention, and that is the Africa Public Service Charter must still go through the AU policy organs. Hence the workshops in the 5 AU regions. There is need to look at some aspects of the charter. But having said that, when we look at what has happened in other countries, Swaziland, for example, has submitted the charter to its cabinet. Namibia has set up an office in the president's office that is looking at systems and together with the UNDP, developing systems for the domestication of their charter. South Africa has not really begun a process for domestication of the charter. primarily because we want to make sure that at the end of it all, when the charter has been fully reviewed and fully adopted by the policy organs, that then we begin the process of domestication. With regard to SADC, I think there are a number of factors why SADC was not represented at the workshop. One is the capacity issues at SADC, which is the very reason why South Africa elected to work with SADC in terms of building capacity. A meeting was held prior to this particular workshop, a visit by the DPSA delegation, Mauritius and so on, and part of it with regard to innovation awards. And then part of the discussion focused on SADC and a meeting with SADC. There was an agreement for SADC to attend, but given the date, SADC had other obligations within the region. Now the plan is actually to have a workshop with the SADC secretariat in Gaborone, and to look through the findings of the workshop that was held in South Africa. So I think the issues are also internal processes in terms of the processes of missions that people go to on behalf of SADC. So I think part of it is primarily that. I think the rest have been addressed by the Director General.
Chair, thank you very much. I would just like to make a comment on the issue of monitoring and also Mr. Baloyi's question, Honourable Minister, Mr. Baloyi's question about where we are at compared. Maybe just to say that I think if one looks at even the advisory board on the anti-corruption or any of the other programs within the minister's program, you'll see there's a very strong element of knowledge exchange, of learning. And of course, often it is so that we do not know. And there, even if you look at the way the study workshop is being replicated, it's been replicated on the South African model, so that you can start developing a body of knowledge and a comparative body of knowledge to help each other with implementation. And for that reason also, we did that research around anti-corruption good practice to find out what is there and we start sharing it. Because often we just don't know. Around the OECD, maybe just a few short points to make. When President Mbeki, back in 1999, when he was Deputy President, indicated that South Africa would move towards the accession process of the OECD, I mean, it obviously took us some time to look at our legislative regime, the implications and the obligations and so forth we would have in it. And then it was in 2004 that we did that outreach to the OECD saying that we would like. So I think that is always in the spirit of us discharging our international obligations, but also the strive towards improving the fight against corruption. And even though the OECD instrument is very, very specific, as it only deals with bribery of foreign officials in international business transactions, within the OECD system and once acceding to those conditions, there are, of course, a range of benefits that we accrue, whether they are economic, political, or access, again, to a wealth of knowledge about how countries have actually implemented the system, where the weaknesses and the strengths are. So that brings great advantage. So, but it's always in the spirit of that drive and not, I think, that we were slow or fast, but it's getting our house in order and moving forward.
Jefferson, I think having noted the responses and the questions that members raised, and actually the seriousness in terms of looking at some of these issues, and looking at the important role that the department is playing, in dealing with issues at the international level. And of course, having to respond to the proposed a role that we have to play. We are going to manage through our committee program further interaction on the matter. That will take on board in terms of what specifically are those things that we need to look at. There are quite a lot. I mean, it's a long list in terms of the issues that we might want to do. So I think we, as a committee, we may want to once more thank the department for even in areas where we ask questions. We're asking these questions sometimes representing the views that need clarification. Not only to us as a committee, but this being a public meeting to the public out there. Because there is no doubt that the public responds differently to the role that we play, you know, at the international level. More especially when it comes to resources management and actually allocation and prioritizing issues. So what is very clear is that the DGSS, the issue of characterizing our state as to whether we have post conflict or not is an issue that needs to be studied. So we need to actually debate on those things. But it's very clear also in terms of what we are doing in the country that we're not neglecting our priority issues. It's not at the expense of us doing what we have to do as national priorities. But it's a question of saying, deal with those national priorities and acknowledging that we're not living in isolation. We may not be able to move with the speed that we want to be able to deal with the post-conflict challenges that may still be with us if we don't get the rest of Africa being part of this forward moving process. I think it is on the basis that as we appreciate the role that the department is playing at the international level, we also appreciate the role that the department is playing, in the country, our transformation of our public service, the policies that we have set. Of course, there are challenges here and there, but we know that those things are actually under control. So I'm saying this to indicate that when we raise these issues, we are raising these things to generate and a situation where we debate these issues. To then say we take care of all our priorities, national and international priorities. So I think it's proper. We will help us structure a better engagement in terms of how do we reduce into a program of action, taking on board what we have to do as a portfolio committee. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Department.